So, it's always good from time to time to get back to basics. And today we're going to start a series on probably the more basics of the basics, which is the Ten Commandments. And if you happen to read the sign on your way in, it's based on the book Breaking the Ten Commandments by Eric Butterworth. That's kind of an intriguing title, Breaking the Ten Commandments, because I don't know about the rest of you, but if you've had any kind of religious upbringing, it's all been about keeping the Ten Commandments, right? Well, Eric is one of my favorite authors. He was a minister for 55 years. Oh, no wonder he was a little shrunken and he was so gray. But he was one of the most powerful lights in the New Thought movement, in New Thought spirituality. He, when you think about it, he was talking advanced metaphysics in the 50s and 60s. And if that wasn't a traditional time, religions were very much set on traditional beliefs. And so he's pretty controversial. And if you've ever been to New York and you've been to Avery Fisher Hall, it's a huge, huge multi-tiered hall and holds quite a few people, and he filled that hall every single Sunday before we had things like mega churches. I mean, his message was just so powerful. He was a speaker, he was an author, he was a teacher, and he wrote many books. There are two predominant traits in Eric's writings. I find him provocative. He makes me think in new ways. Even if I'm rereading a book a couple years after I've read it, it's always, I'm looking and absorbing, and he's making me think in different ways. And he also has this wonderful ability to take complex or confusing concepts, particularly spiritual subjects, and simplify them. So you read it and you go, oh, yeah, okay, I see, I understand. His book, Discover the Power, if you've not read that book, if you've not studied that book, that's required reading for anybody who wants to evolve spiritually. It's really a powerful book. And as I think about it, actually, there's a third trait or theme that runs through Eric's teachings. And it's based on a poem that he loves by Robert Browning from Paracelsus. And I've quoted this before, but the little segment from the poem that so drove Eric Butterworth and his whole ministry became about this was, the line goes, "To know rather consists in opening out a place where the imprisoned splendor may escape than in effecting entry for light supposed to be without." That whole idea of our spiritual journey isn't about discovering something out there or finding another teacher or a guru or some piece of wisdom. It's really about discovering who we are, that inner splendor, and then taking away, like an onion, all those layers that prevent that from coming through so that we can be all that we can be. So, if I were to briefly sum up what New Thought is. And there, you know, often people will say, well, what is unity? And you know, you can go into the theology and the beliefs and the five tenets. But if I would say there's one way that unity is different from traditional beliefs, it would be that we're all about finding our inner splendor, our inner Christ, other than finding some truth out there or praying to a God out there. There's a whole different orientation when you start moving from the inside out as opposed from the outside in. So if we spend the time and the effort, we will definitely find that. We start with the story of Genesis, and that's at the very beginning of Scripture, and the statement, God created us in God's image and likeness. Okay. What does that mean? What does that mean to us? All those qualities that we attribute to God, all that creativity, all that wisdom, all that intelligence is in us because we're created in that image and likeness. And we see that message again when we get into Christian scriptures in the Epistle of Paul, where he says, Christ in you, the hope of glory. What's he referring to? He's referring to that inner essence, that godlike essence, that beautiful spirit that he calls the Christ. If we truly discover that divine connection and trust it, there's the rub, the trusting it, that's where the faith comes in. That's all we need. So, looking at this book by Eric Butterworth, it says Breaking the Ten Commandments. It's going to go on for a few weeks. And Reverend Mike and I are not going to spend the next several weeks talking about all the ways that you cannot follow the Ten Commandments, meaning all the ways that you can sin. At least I wasn't. I don't know what you were going to do, but I'm not. But what we will be doing is breaking down those Ten Commandments and discussing the deeper meanings, because we know, you know, there's always levels to all this stuff that we get in our scripture. And so the whole goal is to enhance our spiritual evolution so that we can lead fulfilling lives. So no sin. If you want that, you go to another church. I'm sure they'll fill you in chapter and verse. Anyway, I would bet most of you know the Ten Commandments, or you know a few of the Ten Commandments, the thou shalt and thou shalt not. We might remember a few of them, but if we had any kind of religious upbringing when we were younger, what we learned were simplified commandments, because if they're simplified and they're condensed, then they're easy to remember, right? I mean, if they go on and on, it's hard to remember all that. So, you know, I'm the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before me. You can't take the name of the Lord in vain. Remember to keep holy the Sabbath, honor your father and mother, don't kill, and the list goes on. You know, don't covet, don't steal, don't bear false witness. So, simple and easy to remember, but that very simplicity really kind of throws us off, because we totally, totally lose the essence of what these commandments are about. So that's the cliff version, cliff notes. And it's not the way they were originally given, and it's not the way they're originally written in the Torah, which is considered the law of the Jewish people. So, first commandment as it's written, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Little bit different than just that simplified version. The second commandment, there's a lot more to it. You shall not make yourselves a graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to those who love me and keep my commandments. That's a mouthful. That got shortened a lot. So it really gets pretty specific on that second commandment. So how does that apply to me or you in this day and age? Because they're considering this was written probably 3,500, 4,000 years ago. I wasn't led out of Egypt, that I remember, you know. I wasn't in bondage like the Hebrews were in Egypt. I don't worship graven images. At least I don't think I do. Or do I? Do you? Well, like everything in the Bible, there's levels of meaning. And there are levels and levels of understanding as we go through those different levels of meaning. There's a level of the story itself. And so it's fascinating. You know, Moses has taken his people out of Egypt. They're wandering around in the desert. They get to Mount Sinai. Moses goes up to Mount Sinai. He comes down, if you've seen the movie, he comes down and he's got the tablets. He's glowing because, of course, he's had an interaction with God. And there he is with all of these carved into two tablets of stone. And then there's the level in these stories of history and of the culture of the people at that time. There's then a level of symbols in the story and allegory. And then there's that deeper, more spiritual level of metaphysics, where we get into the spiritual meaning of what's trying to be conveyed and the idea of the essence of being. Now, I have to back up a little bit. Can't just jump into, you know, Moses now has these two tablets. And actually, he did break all 10 of them because he came down and there were his people worshiping idols. And he was so furious, according to the movie, he dropped them and then had to go back up the mountain again to get some more. But at any rate, that's neither here nor there. So before the story of Moses and the Ten Commandments and Mount Sinai and coming down with the tablets, there's a couple of things that happened that I think are really essential to understanding this whole story and why even are there Ten Commandments? I mean, when you think about it, what's the point? Well, we have to go back to Moses and the burning bush. You all know that story where Moses is out in the wilderness and he sees a bush that looks like it's burning, but it's not consumed. And so he's curious. Moses had fled for his life, according to the story, from Egypt. They were after him. So he fled from everything he was. And again, according to the story, he was fairly prominent. He was educated. He fled from everything he knew, that old life. And he's now in the wilderness, doing what you do in the wilderness, minding sheep or goats or whatever. And he comes upon this bush. And it doesn't burn. And as he approaches, according to the story, he hears a voice that says, "Take off your shoes, for the place you're standing is holy ground." Now, there are times, in those times, and even now, when you go into a temple in the Middle East, or a church, well, not churches, but temples, or even in the Far East, you take off your shoes. You do not walk into temples in the shoes you wear out in the street. It's a sign of respect to this sacred place. So here's Moses in the middle of wherever. No temple, no structure, no holy place. And he hears this voice, "Take off your shoes, you're on sacred ground." What the heck can that mean? And you have to ask why. It seems a little odd. I'm sure Moses thought, what the heck? First of all, I'm hearing voices. Secondly, why is this a sacred place? Why is this holy ground? And when we think about it, what are the common denominators here? There's Moses and there's God. The presence of God. So our first clue in this spiritual awakening, in this spiritual evolution, this spiritual journey to the story that's then to follow with the Ten Commandments is where God, where Moses is, God also is. Now, that's an interesting comment. If Moses moves over here, God is here. If Moses goes someplace else, God is there. That's considered holy ground, a sacred place. Where Moses is and that God connection occurs, you know, because Moses is hearing the voice, so there's the connection, that's a sacred holy place. I mean, Moses can go any place, but if he's not hearing that voice or if he's not connected, then it's not necessarily a holy place, okay? So the God connect, the God awareness is what makes a place holy. So you and I could go through our whole day in a holy place if we're connected with that power and presence. And by the same token, we can spend our whole day not in a holy, sacred place if we're not connected with that sacred voice. Being in the presence is what makes a place holy. Okay. So now we have stories of Moses leading his people out of Egypt. They're camped in the desert. And the story goes on to say, Moses goes up to Mount Sinai, and that's where he receives these 10 commandments, these 10 laws from God. So where or what does Mount Sinai represent? Charles Fillmore, one of our co-founders of Unity, says he defines Sinai as metaphysically as a high or exalted state of consciousness. So yes, there's supposedly a mountain. Yes, Moses supposedly goes up it. But you'll find when you read scripture, whenever they talk about someone going up a mountain, or Elijah, you know, running and hiding, and he goes up a mountain, and that's when he hears that still small voice. That idea of going up somewhere, the up in consciousness, is always what that represents. So when we too go up in consciousness, when we go to a higher level, we too can connect with that powerful voice. So, Mount Sinai, Moses goes up to Mount Sinai. We now know he's in an exalted or higher state of consciousness. Symbols are important in these stories. Again, as I say, they're entertaining, just as they are, but if we want the deeper meanings that are hidden in these stories, we have to look deeper. So, we find also in Christian scriptures, they talk about Jesus going up to Jerusalem. Now, it wasn't necessarily up, but that's where the temple was. So Jerusalem was a sacred place because it represented that's where God dwelled. So whenever you see that going up someplace, that's what that means. Okay, so before we even get to the Ten Commandments, we discover some important spiritual truths for us that we need to understand so that now these Ten Commandments can make some sense to us. Our spiritual roadmap is the Bible. I've talked about that. You know, there's knowledge and there's directions in there for us. And so we find wherever Moses is, wherever he makes that God connection, wherever Moses has that God awareness, that's a holy, powerful place, and much can happen there. What's true for Moses, because this is our roadmap, and this is what he's trying to talk about, is also true for us. So how do we go through our day? How do we start our day to begin with? Do we spend a little time in prayer and trying to make that connection, or just being open to the presence so that we can start our day in a sacred way? And hopefully that will spill over into our day and our interactions. Wherever and whenever Moses wants to connect with that power and presence we call God, he has to go to that higher state of consciousness. He can't be looking at his cell phone. He can't be watching the news. He can't be reading the newspaper or eating his breakfast. It's a way of just stopping and being with that presence, that power and presence. The world, the attitudes, the opinions, the beliefs, all that stuff that's out there, and because it's out there, it's also in us too, and affects who we think we are. It affects what we're capable of. Have you ever had someone you come up with what you think is a brilliant idea, and someone says, ah, that'll never work. Or I tried that, and we did that once, and that didn't work. What does it do? It just totally deflates us. What is that saying? They say, if you think you can or you think you can, you're right. What we have to remember as we start delving into these Ten Commandments, this new interpretation of the Ten Commandments, it really has to do with our attitude, our attitudes about ourselves, our attitudes about what we think about God. In Moses' time, and now in our time, reality is the world we live in, and it's as big as we are. Our world, our reality, is as big as we are. How big or small or powerful or adequate or wise or dumb do we think we are? All of those attitudes that we have need to shift, need to grow, need to mature, need to be open to the truth of who we really are. We are created in the image and likeness of a powerful, creative God. That image and likeness, that power is in us. Those thoughts and attitudes about ourselves, those thoughts and attitudes of our world, you know, our world seems kind of crazy right now, doesn't it? On a lot of different levels. And that then affects our attitudes on how we interact with our world. They're limited by our beliefs. I might say they're limited by our faith in who we really are and in whose image we've been created. We're feeling overwhelmed and less than when in fact we are so powerful, so amazing, that if we all kind of got moving in the same direction, our world would change. Absolutely. The problems in our world are not really problems. They come from our own limited belief. That idea of I've got mine, pull up the ladder kind of belief. If we get to a place where we realize we are unlimited, resources are unlimited, creativity is unlimited, won't that shift everything we do and everything we are? And so these Ten Commandments, Moses really believed we are one with that presence. We are one with that power. And that's the first stepping stone. These Ten Commandments now, these Ten Guidelines, these Ten, what I would call, power tools for moving and growing spiritually are just that. They're all about changing our attitudes about who we are and what we can do. They're not restrictions. We just think of the thou shalt nots, you know, and then you have to. And then there's all these penalties involved with doing or not doing. And what happened is, instead of taking those Ten Commandments, and again, you have to realize the spiritual consciousness of the people at that time was probably a lot more simple. And so, granted, you have to start someplace. You know, when you've got teenagers, you have restrictions on them because they have to learn there are certain things they can and can't do. And when they become more responsible and when they understand and they become more mature, you can give them a lot more responsibility. You don't have to be quite so rigid. Well, these commandments are the same way. They sound a little simplistic. They sound a little hard. They sound a little harsh, a little confining. But in fact, they're the first step to opening us up to an awareness of that power and presence that's always with us. So, the whole goal of these next several weeks, as we start talking and breaking down the commandments, is to move us from our ideas of limitation, our ideas of victimhood, to an awareness of the limitlessness and the power that we have. And I think one of the best ways to kind of sum up that whole concept, again, with this idea of holy ground, is when we're connected with that voice, when we're connected with that power and presence. Someone, in talking about prayer, said, why does prayer seem not to work, or why does prayer work? And the answer was, praying to a God out there, as opposed to that power and presence inside, is actually a practice of the absence of God, because we're praying to some power outside of us. Praying from a higher consciousness, where we're connected with that voice of God, is an awareness of that amazing presence. And so what these Ten Commandments will help us do as we start breaking them down and we start understanding and unwrapping them is how we get from praying to some image outside, some graven image, as the Second Commandment talks about, out there, and now moving our attention and our awareness to that power and presence that is inside us. That was Moses' brilliant insight. That was why he was equipped to lead his people, as they say, out of the bondage of slavery. So next week, we'll talk a little bit more about what's holding us back, what are the graven images, and we've all got them in our lives, that we're serving, that are keeping us captive, that are keeping us in bondage.